Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The inner game is the relationship we have to our greatest purpose and contribution in life. It's about the ways that we grow personally and spiritually on the inside that affects everything on the outside of our lives. The quality of our inner game is becoming increasingly important because we now know that the world shifts to reflect that quality or whatever is there collectively inside us. Each of our contributions is critical to the quality of what is possible for us all on the planet. So these are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives, and an opportunity to hear about how these people take on their spiritual and personal growth, and how that strengthens their organizations and businesses to make a bigger difference. Our guest today is Deva Shante, co-owner of True Nature Healing Arts in Carbondale with her husband, Eden. Deva is a yoga instructor and trainer, a healer, a fine artist, a business owner, and a mother, the role she currently holds as primary in her life. Thank you so much for being here, Deva.
Thank you, Gwen.
You had a near-death experience that was pivotal in bringing you to where you are now, and I'll ask you about that in a moment.
Okay.
But could you describe what your life was like and who you were before that experience?
Ooh, before that change in my life, I was type A very much and success-driven, and you know, everything revolved around that. It was less about pleasure and more about succeeding in career, family, myself.
At all costs.
At all costs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a lot of anxiety. I began getting anxiety attacks right before the near-death experience.
Wow.
And the biggest one, I just can remember locking myself in the closet on the ground, head to the floor, because it was like I didn't know what to do.
And did you know where the anxiety was coming from? I mean, did you like, oh, this is because this is happening, blah, blah, blah? Or is it just sort of started happening?
It was a culmination of so many things. I don't think I knew what it was from at all. I associated with stress, but more than that, I didn't know the bigger picture of what it was. It was, mm-hmm. I wasn't listening to anything that my heart was saying.
Yeah.
I shut down the heart so that my mind could push me forward into success.
Got it. Mm-hmm. So then it's in January, you're about 25, and what happens?
I'm going on a snowshoe run with my sister and my dog, and you know, which is something I routinely did because I was very much into snowshoe racing. And I took my sister out. What was supposed to be a very easy loop turned into a 9-hour freezing to death nightmare.
Getting lost.
Yeah.
And you said that even though it didn't end up being, you know, physically a near-death experience, there was part of it that was like that. Describe that a little bit.
You know, on this experience, there was a distinct moment at the end when I said goodbye to myself. Mm. And when I said goodbye to myself, what I really said goodbye to was the part of me that didn't believe in anything, the part of me that was striving for something that didn't really bring happiness. And I left that mountain truly understanding there's something else out there.
And then what happened after that?
After that, I ran to Barnes & Noble the next day and bought every book on spirituality. I had the largest shopping cart of all these yoga books and stuff and Buddhism books. And I dove in and started my first teacher training. That's where it all started.
So the entry point was yoga. Mm-hmm. Any why that instead of anything else, or any insight into that over as time has gone on?
Well, you know, I was raised anti-religious, and mm-hmm. so I just couldn't step into anything in a religious sense mm-hmm. at that time. So yoga was a way that I could move my physical body and start to slow down because everything was type A. Mm-hmm. My workouts were extreme, and when I got into yoga, Shavasana about killed me because I couldn't understand why I was paying somebody to lie there on the floor. I thought I could go home and go to sleep.
Right.
And so, you know, I was lucky enough to meet a teacher that knew how to, because this was at like 2020 Fitness. It's one of those fitness places with a little yoga room.
Right, right.
But she knew how to talk to people like me, type A driven people that needed success in the yoga class, but slip in spirituality.
Mm.
And so with her, I started to recognize I wasn't breathing. And I was breathing backwards.
Mm-hmm.
My inhales sucked in instead of expanding
right.
out. You know, she was really the first person that opened up this door to spirituality. And then in the teacher training, because I enrolled very shortly after.
Do you think yoga has been that bridge for a lot of people who wouldn't necessarily get involved in anything spiritual, but maybe end up finding their spiritual self through
Definitely.
It?
Definitely. I find that, you know, 9 out of 10 people that come to their first yoga class, they're not coming for the spirit quality. They're coming to get healthier physically.
Mm-hmm.
Then it happens. When you start to recognize the breath is related to the posture, then you start to realize you're not breathing because your mind is scattered. And so it all tends to go together.
And you had mentioned to me that this first teacher told you that she could see your pain.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of revelatory for you that, oh, my God, you can see what's going on for me.
Yes.
And how do you see that happening for others? Or what was that moment like for you? What did that provide for you?
You know, I wore a lot of scarves and sweaters and lots of things to cover up my heart. And I rounded my shoulders forward, which I still constantly have to work on that protection. But she came up and she put her hand on my heart and she said, I don't know who hurt you, but we're going to open this up. And it was the first moment I realized what I was trying to hide, I was actually showing to the world
mm-hmm.
my pain. And one, that was frightening because that meant I was unsuccessful.
Darn it.
What I was trying to hide wasn't working. And it showed me that there are people out there that, one, care, and two, can see me. And so it was scary and liberating at the same time.
I think that's probably true of most people, that we have all these things we're constantly trying to hide.
Yeah.
And we don't realize that we're probably not very many of us doing a very good job of that.
Correct. If you know what to look for, you can see it. It's just, it's apparent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you also shared with me that you could see things at an early age and you didn't understand what that was about. Maybe share a little bit of that, because I bet there are a lot of people out there that have that going on, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, it started extremely early for me. It's what I can remember the earliest on, and as I was a toddler, I never was alone. In my bedroom, there was always somebody else in there.
What did it look like? I mean, did you really see like a whole other person?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Many people. It was frightening.
Mm,
and every
bet.
Time I would ask my family, you know, that I'm seeing somebody, and they couldn't see, and so... I mean, you can just imagine
there's
what people
wrong
would say.
With me. Yeah.
You're crazy, mm-hmm. and there's nothing in there. And I was told all the time, there's nothing in there. Go back to bed.
Right.
And I would see it at night, because when it gets quiet is when I relax enough, and then the visions would really come. I'd
okay.
really be able to see them, and they'd try communicating to me.
Mm.
And it wasn't anything frightening. It wasn't any poltergeist stuff. This was relatives that had passed on that were my spirit guides. And... I blocked it as best as I can. It's amazing what happens when you block the vision of sight, because it can have physical problems that happen. Like my eyesight has always been something that I had, you know, this severe astigmatism, and it's like I didn't want to see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried my best to not see, and I was very successful at it until this yoga teacher training, and it just bursted back open.
And since then, your intuition, which obviously has always been there,
mm-hmm.
has become more honed, I mm-hmm. would imagine. It's something
yeah.
you use now as part of your healing practice. Can
yes.
you talk about that a little bit and how
yeah.
others can do that? Like how we can do that, how we can use our intuition more?
Well, once it started to open up and I had people around me that let me know it was okay, you know, I wasn't crazy. I am actually seeing things. You know, I was affirmed many times. And as I started to get signs that what I was seeing was actually real and there, and I was hearing things, and I started to trust it. And as I started to trust it, well, then I would listen to it, and then I started acting on it. And it's as simple as when you know you have to go somewhere that you've never been, you're following directions, and you're on that highway, and there's this moment that you're like, I think I should turn right. I think I should turn right. And then you ignore it because you're like, no. And then you're like, dang it, I knew that. I knew
right.
I needed to turn
Darn
right.
It.
And those are those little moments of our intuition, and they just start happening more.
Mm-hmm.
But it does take courage to trust
right.
your
That's
own
the big
inner
piece.
Voice.
Yeah.
And a long journey of me learning to trust it. And even still to this day, I mean, there are moments where I don't know if I should share what I'm seeing, feeling, or hearing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain people I can share it with, and
right.
there are others that, you know, I can't.
Yeah.
And I honor that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a journey.
You also talked about dogma
mm-hmm.
and realizing that so much of, I think even of spiritual practice,
mm-hmm.
tends to have a lot of rules.
Mm-hmm.
And just getting to the point of seeing that that wasn't so helpful.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's, I mean, as we look at an increasingly fundamental world,
mm-hmm.
religiously and in other ways, we're needing to kind of confront maybe getting to the point where it's an outdated need for so much
right.
Dogma.
So I was success driven. That's my nature. And so when I entered yoga, I followed every rule. And if I was told to do something in order to reach some goal, I did it. And it became a fault because I was practicing so many exercises and rules. And it got to the point where I'm getting up at 3:30 in the morning, 4 a.m., and doing 4 or 5 hours of practices before even beginning my normal day, that I was wearing myself out mentally, physically, spiritually, and even down to everything I was eating was analyzed because is it Ayurvedic? Is it doshic? Is it karmic? Is it, you know, and all these different things. And I got to the point where I had to stop the rules and I had to start learning how to listen back to my intuition, listen to my body and see what do I need to maintain balance in my own life. And while I use some of those tools, I'm not nearly as rigid as I used to be. And when I find myself getting rigid, I know that there's something I have to look at again because the rigidity is a fault for me.
Mm-hmm. So it was more of a more personal thing
mm-hmm.
that was going on. I imagine the adherence to rules as a discipline has a value
mm-hmm.
in itself of being able to create some inner discipline.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine there's a point at which we all need to become more self-guided.
Yes.
Because there's no set of rules out there that works for everybody.
No. There's an inner truth we all hold, but very few of us were taught to listen to that.
Right.
We're taught to listen to something outside of us instead of inside of us. And that's where I think the fault happens.
And you could say that it's easier to listen to a set of rules than it is to listen to yourself. But man, listening to yourself is pretty hard as well.
It is. It is. It requires a lot of trust and patience because there's going to be times that you hit it right on the head and then other times that you don't.
Mm-hmm. Trial and error.
Yeah.
You know, we have to be, I think, probably willing to make a lot of mistakes along the way in our personal development.
We do, and then it comes into if we have any concern about what other people think of us
mm.
or people, society, our community, you know, all that, it can weigh on you and make it very difficult to see yourself clearly.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of filters.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to figure out if they're yours or they're somebody else's. Or
exactly.
You know. Well, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KD&K. My guest today is Deva Shante, and we're talking about some of the things that you encounter as you continue to deepen on your spiritual and just personal
mm-hmm.
path of development. You know, I always like to ask people, what is a skill or a behavior that you've developed or are developing Mm-hmm. That's making a difference in how your business, how True Nature Healing Arts functions.
I would say my skill, my top skill with the business is seeing and feeling into things.
Give me an example of what that looks like in practice.
Well, I can walk right in to the studio and know instantly if something's off. And by something being off, it could be a physical thing like a cleanliness thing. It could be energetically something off. It could be an employee is in the wrong position. I have such a heightened sense of feeling that when something is off, it might feel like it's off by 1% in a normal person. For me, it's off by 99%. And it's like, wow, something's wrong and we've got to like work on this. And I use that, and then I have Eden, my partner, who helps balance it out by he takes the information and then works with it. But my role is really the visionary role of seeing and feeling into how things are flowing and moving on all the levels.
So if you were going to encourage someone else to do more of that in their own business, how might they make a start?
Physical. So everything starts at the physical because it's something very tangible to work with.
So just noticing your physical responses in different moments throughout the day?
Or start even more by looking at your space physically.
Okay.
Because I would recommend everybody look at that. Remove clutter out, because anything cluttered just means there's something hidden in there. And the reason there's clutter is because of emotional stuff. Mm-hmm. And then mental clutter comes in. And so if we can all just look at our work environments, everyone works better in an environment that's clean, but also beautiful. If you're in a dark cave, that's going to give you a different feeling than being in a bright, clean, open space. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. And then once you have the setup in a cohesive way that works, then you can look at the emotional energy that might be present in there, the mental clutter that goes on. Is everyone focused or are they scattered? And yourself, you know, all of this you can just self-reflect in. But then the wisdom, looking at it, overshadowing it, and seeing what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
How can we impact more? What is our impact? Why are we doing this? Who's it serving?
Good questions. And I find that, you know, I work with companies to help them bring their values into operational alignment. And those are some questions that oftentimes people don't ever ask or don't ask regularly enough to have them make a difference in their daily practice.
Yep.
What are some ways that at True Nature Healing Arts you kind of develop your team to always be in alignment with those things that are really important to you?
Well, we do have a set of guiding principles that we've created, and we're constantly updating and fine-tuning to get them even more clear.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take an example of, you know, being eco-friendly, it comes down to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, one day I saw that there was Tampax tampons in the bathroom. It's like, whoop, not happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like we need to have organic cotton tampons that are not going to be cancer-causing to somebody. Every single thing, the toilet paper we're using, is it compostable? I mean, the amount of time that goes into picking packaging for the kitchen and making sure it's the most environmentally conscious.
Mm-hmm.
You can't decide in one moment to follow it and in another moment to not follow it. There's integrity, and that integrity has to be present in the way we build and in the way we live.
That walking of the talk,
yeah,
that's so important. It's always, I think, helpful to kind of look at the ways where we have a fumble and are able to have compassion for ourselves, because God knows it is hard running a business or managing a family.
Yes.
And what's an example of, you know, just when you notice that you're off and how do you get back on track?
Well, if I'm off, it means that I need self-care.
Mm-hmm.
And I do tend to push through things too much. And that's that success vasana that comes through me in every part of my life. And so there are moments as a mother when I have to say to the kids, I need a bath. And just stop everything. Because I have learned what balances me the most is water.
Mm.
And if I get in a nice hot bath, I only need one for 5 minutes, and I have already balanced myself in such a way. Or even a hot cup of tea. Mm-hmm. Because for my constitution, I need warmth and I need water in some way, shape, or form to recalibrate. And I have to feed myself regularly. It's these little things that just make me run so much better. Like a car getting its oil changed when it needs to instead of waiting too long.
Right.
It just really does help.
I think, you know, it's probably for everyone, mm-hmm. but definitely for mothers. Mm-hmm. That self-care takes a back seat mm-hmm. when we're driven to do whatever we're doing that's important to us.
Yeah.
How can people see self-care as an important practice and get over whatever it is, whatever that block is, whatever that self-talk is that keeps you from giving it to yourself?
Right. Well, I think sometimes it can be looked at as being selfish. Mm-hmm. Or you're not caring about other people, you just care about yourself. Like, there's a lot of that kind of talk that can come in. I find that that's the number one thing I'm teaching my daughter in puberty is self-care. Mm. Because her hormones, they're something that you can't control. They come in, they're doing their thing, but how can she respond to them? I believe in doing natural things. So, you know, I work with her on educating, try this, try this, try this. And you know, through trial and error, we find these ways that are balancing her. And I have to take mental note of, okay, I'm teaching her self-care. How am I doing it myself? You know? But if I show them how I'm balancing myself, that's the best way to teach them how to balance them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Do you have family times when you look at, oh, here's what went really well, and here's what could have been better? You know, I always want to sort of wonder what people's family practices are that instill that ability to be self-observant.
Yes, we communicate. You know, we just had a major communication this past weekend because there was a birthday party thrown for me and my daughter got a little teenager on me.
And what did that look like?
She just got a little edgy and she was tired and she wanted to go home and I wasn't ready to go home yet and couldn't go home yet. It mm-hmm. was my party.
Right.
For me. I couldn't exactly leave it.
Right.
So there was a moment where I let her have her experience, but then the next day when she had rest and woke up, you know, I sat her down and I said, you know what? That didn't feel very good. And so I was honest about what it brought up in me and what I felt. And instantly you saw her just take it in and she's like, whoa, I'm sorry. Mm. I didn't mean to do that. And I also acknowledged, you know, I know that she didn't mean to do it. She wasn't trying to hurt my feelings. But in that teenager stage, they're thinking about themselves.
Right. She's not thinking about you right then.
It's their world.
Right.
And they're trying to balance their world and they don't know how to always do it with considering other people. So we had to communicate on it, and instantly it's like, good. So we do a lot of talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That kind of communication, I think, is so necessary in all aspects of our lives, because how often do we keep something to ourselves that just hangs out there in the space and causes separation and resentment
yes.
and all those things, and we don't get complete
right.
in our conversation?
Totally agree. Totally agree.
Is that something you find you're always kind of need to be working on sort of in the business world? Or is it something that's coming more and more easily?
It comes more and more easily. It's not always the easiest for me personally to confront. Certain people I can confront. But in terms of being a boss, part of my job that I wish I could get rid of, I do pass the buck as much as I can so that somebody else can do the dirty work on that part. But anything that I'm feeling, if I don't resolve it, it just grows and builds. And then it gets kind of dirty and murky. So I do my best to take care of things as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So my last question is, what's something specific that you envision for the future? What would you like to see happen?
More self-reflection. I think if all of us took time each day, 5 minutes, to check in with ourselves and just see where we're at, we would respond differently in every situation.
I couldn't agree more. Mm-hmm. It's no mystery that that's the basis of almost every wisdom tradition, that you begin with self-awareness and you continue it all the time.
Mm-hmm. And it is a practice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's the easiest one to fall off the wagon with.
Right.
You know, you
right.
get caught up, you get busy.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, I'm self-aware, you know, right.
Exactly. But we need that time. I think that's the most important self-care we have, that time.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks,
That's a beautiful
Gwen.
Place to end. And thank you all for listening today. If you have a question for Deva or for me, please join the Facebook page at The Inner Game. It's a great place to ask more questions or to share an insight that you've had out of the conversation. So until next time, love generously, starting with yourself. You, my child, are away. You, my child, are awake.